Haiti in turmoil amid political and economic crises and deadly gang violence. Now Kenya is offering to intervene and lead a multinational police force to help combat the gang violence. Haitians want the help and Haiti needs the help, but rights groups say Kenyan cops in the Caribbean could make things worse. In the next half hour, we'll look at how Haiti got to this point and what Kenya's offer to help could mean for the island nation. Straight Talk Africa starts now. Hello there and a warm welcome to Straight Talk Africa, coming to you from VOA's headquarters in Washington. I'm Heidi Adams. For years, there have been headlines and warnings from inside Haiti and beyond about the political, economic and security crises unfolding in that country. The situation took a stunning turn in 2021 with the assassination of President Jovenel Moïse, shot 12 times in his private home. At the time, Haiti was already battling a rise in violence and an economic crisis made worse by a wave of earthquakes, hurricanes, and cholera outbreaks. Moïse's death created a power vacuum and plunged the country into further turmoil as gangs seized control with daily killings and kidnappings. There are an estimated 200 gangs operating across Haiti, percent of that city. Residents there say life in Haiti has now become a living hell. On Monday, thousands of Haitians marched through the capital demanding protection from the gang violence.
I'm in the streets today because as a youngster who lives in Carrefour Foyer, we can't live like this anymore. The other neighborhoods are gangsterized, but we're standing and we will not give up on Carrefour Foyer. The government has to say something before it gets worse. People are abandoning their homes. If this worsens, we, the unfortunate ones, are going to be the victims. We have nobody. We're fighting alone.
They are thieves. We can't sleep. We can't eat. We can't even leave. We didn't create the gangs. They need to realize it.
We demand an intervention in Carrefour Foyer because we want to go back to our homes. Our children have been shot. They can't get surgery. We have patients in hospitals who can't get surgery because of money. We're asking the Departmental Directorate of West Police to help. We're asking for an intervention in Carrefour Foyer. We're asking for tanks.
We can't sleep. We can't do anything. A police officer was murdered. We're demanding justice for him. And other policemen fired tear gas on us. It's been 4 months since we're fighting. We can't leave our home and sleep on the streets. The government doesn't care about us.
Haitians, they're talking about what everyday life is like for them. Now, to help us understand how Haiti got here and what is behind the country's multiple crises, I'm joined here in studio by Sandra Lemaire. She leads VOA's Creole News Service. Sandra, so great to have you here in studio with me. Thank you so much for coming in and talking to us. Help us understand this. Haiti appeared to have been bouncing from one crisis to another for years now. I mean, we've seen the headlines, but what is behind the turmoil that we see today?
There are multiple factors, Haiti, that are behind the turmoil that we're seeing today. Before Moïse's assassination in 2021, there were mass protests where people were not happy, not satisfied with the way that he had been running the country. And so they were asking for him to leave, to just, you know, leave power and let someone else take over so that things could get better. On top of that, you have an economic crisis that's fueled by a fuel shortage. So the gangs have gotten involved in that because, of course, you know, power and fuel is power for them. It's not only money, but it's also power. And Haitians are very reliant on fuel for electricity because the electric system is basically, the infrastructure is awful, and most people don't have electricity 24 hours a day. So there are all of those factors. Of course, that also affects businesses and how businesses can run. It affects tourism, which also fuels the economy. The diaspora, you know, contributes a lot of money to the Haitian economy. They like to travel to Haiti by property. They're unable to do that because of the gangs and their activity and the lack of security. So we already started with a situation where there was a lack of security. Some say it served the president well because he was able to, you know, push the idea of I need to stay in power because there's not security, so I can't organize elections. So that means that I have to stay in power because who's going to replace me? It's not like you can have the prime minister replace the president because the president names the prime minister. So all of these factors have contributed to where we are today.
So, of course, we did see in 2021 President Jovenel Moïse's assassination really captured the world's attention. What do we know, just briefly, about why he was killed?
We actually don't know why the president was killed. There have been theories floated out there. He was wildly unpopular. He was trying to make a lot of changes to the Constitution, some of which were seen as radical, which people didn't like. He had let the terms of most of the parliament run out, which meant that he was ruling by decree, which angered the United States. It angered the international community, the core group, which has, you know, Europe and Brazil in it. And then, of course, there are always, you know, political rivalries between, you know, the ruling party, which is the president's party, and the opposition. So some people say that it was just political rivalries because before his assassination, there was an attempted coup, supposedly, which was thwarted, I think, in February of the same year that he was assassinated. And then, aside from that, there are people who say that he was involved in drugs. That's never been proven. It's just an allegation.
So, Sandra, given the fact that he was an embattled leader already at the time of his assassination, the country was already facing all these multiple crises, how then did his death contribute to making things so much worse?
Well, the thing is that he died and he was already ruling by decree. So already you have, you know, a non-functional parliament. You have a few lawmakers whose mandates are still valid, but all of those terms ended in January of this year. So there were only two left as of January 2023, and their terms expired. So you don't have a functioning legislative branch to kind of counterbalance what the president wants to do. The president had named the current prime minister just a few days before he was assassinated. The prime minister was someone not many people knew about. Everyone was shocked that, who is this guy? He's a neurosurgeon, a renowned Haitian neurosurgeon. And people were like, why is he being named as prime minister? What does he know about politics? So the president dies, and we have the foreign minister as acting prime minister. And then because the president had named a prime minister, they decide, okay, the foreign minister is going to go back to foreign minister, and we're going to put the person the president named, since the president is democratically elected, as prime minister. But he is seen as, you know, not really a democratically elected official. People are very suspicious of him. And they see him as a lame duck, somebody who doesn't really have a legitimate power, because normally the parliament would have to sign off on whoever you name as prime minister. That hasn't happened. So this has fueled all kinds of mistrust, and also given the gangs kind of a leeway to say, hey, you know, let me see what I can get away with. It's like, right, if you're in school, your regular teacher who's very stern is on vacation and you have a substitute, you try to see what you can get away with the substitute teacher. That's the case with the gangs. The gangs were already problematic for the president, but they stayed more or less under control. Now that there isn't a president, it's this prime minister who they don't fear, clearly. They're just doing whatever they want to do.
Sandra, of course, the security situation alone speaks volumes about what the president is able to control or seems to control or not. We hear reports of these gang battles on the streets, kidnappings, ransoms, killings, rape being used as a weapon. If you look at everyday life for Haitians now, is this a war zone?
Most Haitians alive today don't know what it's like to live through a war, but if you look at all of the factors that are present in a war zone, probably most people would say yes. Haiti, the thing that the audience needs to understand in general is that with the situation of gang violence and the climate that it's created in the country, prior to the president's assassination, the gangs would target the bourgeoisie because the bourgeoisie had money and they would, you know, kidnap you and, you know, ask you for a ransom of $50,000, $30,000. Now they're targeting everyone. They're targeting, you know, the workers who are poor. They're targeting the police. They're targeting, you know, government officials. They try to target, you know, the international community working in Haiti and the bourgeoisie. So it's really everyone who's under attack at this point.
And that is what I guess makes the situation worse and different today than in the past. Sandra Lemaire, head of VOA's Creole News Service, thank you so much for giving us insight and really walking us through what exactly is going on in the island nation. I do appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
Well, now Kenya wants to send their police to Haiti as part of a multinational force to help bring the situation there under control. After the break, we'll discuss Nairobi's offer. Will 1,000 Kenyan police officers in Haiti help or hurt? And why do rights groups think Kenyan cops should not deploy to the Caribbean? We'll have that conversation on the other side of the break. Stray Dog Africa will be back in a moment.
In times of change, when the world seems uncertain, and what we hear doesn't reflect what we see, we seek the truth. When we are told only part of the story, we lose trust. In moments of crisis, our dreams, hopes, and wishes for a better tomorrow depend on a free press. At Voice of America, we bring you the stories that people take risks to see. We connect the world and unite it with truth. At Voice of America, we show you the whole picture.
Health, wellness, sport, beauty, medical breakthroughs. Healthy Living cares about your well-being. What are the main health concerns in Africa and around the world? Find out the latest on coronavirus. Connect with our experts and ask them questions.
How long does the virus stay?
Join me, Linoch Mudu, in Washington, every week on Healthy Living, right here on VOA.
With Straight Talk Africa, welcome back. We're discussing the situation in Haiti. Now, Kenya has pledged to deploy a contingent of 1,000 police officers to help Haitian police, quote, restore normalcy in the country and protect strategic installations. Haiti's Prime Minister, Ariel Henry, asked for help from the United Nations last year when gangs began taking control of much of the country. Haitian authorities have welcomed Kenya's offer. So have the United Nations, the United States, and Canada. But there's concern among rights groups in Kenya Kenya. They say sending Kenyan police to the Caribbean could make things there worse. Let's take a closer look at all of this. And I'd like to welcome my guests. They are Johanna LeBlanc. She's here in studio with me. Johanna is a partner at the international law firm Adomi Advisory Group. She's a former foreign policy advisor to the Haitian government. Irungu Houghton is the executive director of Amnesty International Kenya. He joins us from Nairobi. And in New York is David Monda. He's a professor of political science at City University of New York. A warm welcome to all three of you, Johanna Irungu and Professor Johanna. I'm actually going to ask you to kick us off here. You know, Haiti is often described as the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere. It was once the wealthiest and most profitable colony in the region. Is it any surprise today to the world, given the experiences of the country, that Haiti is now appears to be the least governed country in the Western Hemisphere?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, and I hate the word the poorest country in the hemisphere or in the world, because Haiti's liberation for independence was a sign for black liberation all over the world. When the country gained its independence right. in 1804, it was not just about liberating Haitians from the oppression and suppression of France. It was also about liberating black people from all over the world, right. and that came with a cost. So where Haiti is at today is a mixture of failed foreign policy as well as bad leadership. You're talking about, for example, foreign policy such as the intervention in 1915, which brought about no stability to the country. This intervention was by the United States, and then you had the UN intervention, followed by numerous foreign policy coming out of Washington, like, for example, under the Clinton administration, completely decimated the rice sector in Haiti. So that rice industry from Arkansas could sell rice to the Republic of Haiti. So you have to look at both the leadership in Haiti as well as foreign policy. And it's no surprise that Haiti is where it's at today. But I have hope. I'm confident that Haiti will rise, the people of Haiti will rise, and Haiti will regain its proper place in the world stage.
A little bit of a sidebar here. You know, can see the struggles I have in this country where my name is often confused with the name of Haiti, the country, Haiti and Haiti, as the Americans say it. But Johanna, absolutely, taking all of those things into account, because this is a country with a very complicated history, littered with, as you said, a lot of foreign intervention. And here again, we are now talking about foreign intervention again. Professor David Monda, please help us understand how Haiti became so poor, in the sense that are we looking at another example of the struggle to build stability and prosperity in a post-colonial country?
I think we definitely are. It's a crisis of post-coloniality. You know, as you referenced earlier, there was this controversy around the French indemnity of 1825, where Haiti had to send a lump sum of about $21 billion in order to get recognition from France. So there's a lot of historical dynamics. But I also must add that there are internal dynamics in Haiti, lack of leadership, challenges from the Moïse government and how he emasculated the legislature, the judiciary in terms of his governance. And the crisis we see right now is really centered around internal dynamics of crime in terms of security, around gangs and vigilantism and other killings that are related to that, but also the challenges that come from outside of the country in terms of the Haitian diaspora, politicians abroad who are fueling and paying for some of the illegal activities of some of these gangs. So with this crisis situation, killings are up 53% this year. There's over 500,000 small arms in the hands of these different gangs on the island. It really becomes a very tenuous and difficult proposition to have any regional or international actor move into the country to come and try and restore order in a very, very difficult security and humanitarian condition.
And I'll come back to you, Johanna, to get your take on that. I want to go to Irungu Houghton here. Civil society groups have reacted, of course, to Kenya's offer to now intervene here in the situation in Nairobi. They say Nairobi's pledge to send its police force to Haiti is akin to essentially exporting Kenya's police brutality and abuse. What is Amnesty International's position on this?
Well, first of all, just to say on behalf of Amnesty International, our solidarity with the people of Haiti. We can see the suffering and the breakdown of law and order, and really just listening to the voices of Haitians a few minutes ago, I was just really struck once again how much trauma there is in that country right now. And of course, it would be an act of Pan-African solidarity for Kenyan officers to come across and help stabilize the situation. But based on the last 3 to 4 months, we are very skeptical that Kenyan police would be able to do anything that would de-escalate the situation, return the rule of law. And this is primarily due to the experience we have had as Kenyans over the last 90 days or so. We've had 3 months of about 9 rounds of protests, and each of them have become more violent than the last. And we have probably documented as Amnesty International, the Law Society of Kenya, and the Kenya Medical Association, no less than 40 deaths and over 100 injuries, some of those from people who are really either recovering from being shot with live bullets or rubber bullets, or have been essentially brutally assaulted with batons. And for that, it doesn't give us much hope that a police service intervention at this point would be very, very helpful for the people of Haiti. In many ways, I think we have to see a change of policing. The international standard is, of course, that of is the policing proportionate to the threat that is being faced? Is it reasonable? And also, is it necessary? And unfortunately, under those UN threshold standards, the Kenyan police have not met them over the last 3 to 4 months.
Johanna, Prime Minister Ariel Henry has asked the United Nations for help, and they've welcomed the Kenyan offer for help. What is your take about what Kenya can really bring to the situation here?
Well, since 1986, Haiti has dealt with serious instability. But the reality is that the country has not seen this level of violence. As discussed earlier, many of these weapons that end up in the hands of gang members come from the United States. In fact, about 90% of them, according to numerous reports, which is unprecedented. So if there's a political will, first and foremost, I think the issue of insecurity in Haiti could be solved. But as it relates to Kenya offering support to the people of Haiti to address the insecurity challenges, I think it shows Pan-Africanism solidarity. I've been watching Ruto for quite some time now. He seems to be someone who understands the role that imperialism and neocolonialism have played in the underdevelopment and the undermining of democracy all across the world, including Africa and obviously the Republic of Haiti. So I have some faith. I have some hope. However, the people of Haiti, the human rights groups, do not want this to be another intervention with a black face. I think that certain perimeters need to be set by the Haitian government, which I have not seen, so I am concerned. If you are going to accept help from another nation to support, to address the insecurity challenges, we need to know how long will they stay in Haiti, right? What are the consequences of human rights violations, right? But the unfortunate reality is that we're dealing with a current government that is seen as illegitimate in the eyes of the Haitian people, that has not been able to deliver for the Haitian people. So if you can't deliver for the Haitian people, how is it that the people can have faith that you will properly negotiate with another international a partner to address the insecurity challenge? And many are saying that the insecurity challenge is again because of lack of political will by not only the Haitian government but also the international community as a whole.
Professor David Monda, is there a world in which Kenya could actually provide some useful assistance that everybody will agree that their presence there would be a good thing?
Yes, I mean, I see it a little different from, from Amnesty International and you know, some of the points that Houghton raised. Yes, the Kenya police has not covered itself in glory, you know, with its actions in Kenya. There's many concerns around that. But every police department has its own major problems. Think about New York City and extrajudicial killings here within the New York Police Department, or the Chicago.
We seem to have some problems there. He's back.
Every police department has its challenges. So I guess my thinking is that I'd rather deal with a police force that I have than one that I'd aspire to have. And I think this effort to have a police force, at least if it can be regulated, I think would be a good thing. But I think, secondly, the more important question, even before we talk about intervention, is the legitimacy of the Ariel Henry regime. I think questions of legitimacy really have to be addressed. In other words, we have to find a way to establish an interim administration that's broadly accepted. Because Ariel Henry's call earlier to have a foreign intervention force was roundly condemned by Haitians because they see foreign intervention as propping up an illegitimate regime. So I think that is the number one start off point. But secondly, intervention for intervention's sake can be very problematic. We know the history of the UN, of the mass rapes, the corruption during the UN's 12 to 15 year stay in Haiti, the cholera epidemic. So that's also another major concern. In other words, you don't want to have intervention with a black face, you know, as has been said earlier. And I think if we can really think about an intervention, but structured around CARICOM, the regional organization, only the Bahamas has offered 150 police officers to support this Kenyan initiative. Where the regional powers like Jamaica, Trinidad and Tobago, Guyana, Cuba, that there are major superpowers within the CARICOM bloc, the Caribbean. So I'd really like to see more of a regional effort in terms of the intervention. But I think fundamentally, we really need to think about establishing an interim administration to replace the Ariel Henry regime, which at this point is very legitimate. And then from then, think about modes of intervention led by regional players, and then other international forces can contribute, whether it's from Kenya or any other regional force to support the police in that area.
Irungu, what's the right thing to do here in your view? Clearly something does need to be done. The UN has called for foreign intervention, a specialized support force. That doesn't sound like a peacekeeping force to go to Haiti. In your view, is this warranted? And if not Kenya's police force, then whose police?
No, I think it's very clear. I think from the analysts, on the show, that we do need to see, an international policing force established for Haiti. I mean, the situation just seems dire, and the criminality seems to have increased, and is now a threat to many communities. But I think it's important that we source the police commands from countries in which there is a record of human rights-based policing, effective policing that builds up community and civic intelligence, that builds a sense of credibility for rule of law and law and order. And unfortunately, the Kenyan police service is not at that level yet, and particularly over the last 6 months or so. We've been monitoring much of the police service for this year. And to be honest, whether it comes from the use of non-unified uniformed officers or the indiscriminate use of tear gas in people's homes, and the suffocation of even minors and some babies, or even the indiscriminate use of water cannons in large crowds, and the shooting of several young people. Many of the 40 people that have been killed in the last 3 to 4 months are really between the ages of 17 and 25. And we've been very concerned about the lack of capacity to be able to identify who are legitimate protesters, the right to assembly, but also criminals and looters.
Right. We're going to have to leave it there. We've run out of time, but we will come back to this topic again, and I'll invite all of you back. Thank you so much, Irungu Houghton, Professor David Monda, and Johanna LeBlanc. A great pleasure to have all of you here. And that is where we will leave it for this week. Thanks to my guests, of course. Thanks to our affiliate stations carrying Straight Talk Africa across the African continent, and to you for always watching and always listening. I'll see you next time. Bye-bye.